For untold centuries the masters of the ageless wisdom have tried to explain to retarded humanity that they could secure any desired results in their lives by properly qualifying the electronic energy which flows constantly from the higher self to the four lower bodies. Finally, after 19 million years, people are beginning to grasp the idea. Since thoughts are things, the time to create something or anything according to a certain predetermined pattern is at the time the pure unqualified electronic substance enters the bloodstream with each heartbeat. Each electron that enters the bloodstream with each heartbeat is necessarily qualified in any event, but usually in an uncontrolled manner. The average individual does not understand the proper method of working with pure God substance, and, therefore, the electrons, undirected by human thought, are forced to take on whatever qualities the bloodstream carries. If an individual is angry, the bloodstream reflects that fact, and the pure electrons, whirling on their course, are surrounded with murky gray astral matter carrying the vibrations of anger. On the other hand, if a man is in the act of composing a symphony, the electrons, leaving the heart, enter into a bloodstream that is vibrating at an inspirational level. The shell of astral matter which collects around the electrons will, therefore, carry a great deal of light and brilliant color patterns which reflect the exact intensity of sincerity and love which the individual has for his creative effort. If he is a composer of the caliber of Wagner, the magnetic qualities of the light will attract memories from the subconscious or etheric body, memories of melodies heard in the music temple while the physical body was asleep. The memories will come surging back, consuming all darkness which may impede their path, and magnetically anchor themselves to the atomic structure within the bloodstream which is forming around a common center. As the blood is pumped back to the heart and circulated again, hundreds of fresh, pure electrons of God substance are attracted to the atomic center which is to produce a great symphony. The atomic structure is vibrating at high speed, the message is carried by the blood to the entire body. The composer brings the entire focus of his attention to his task. He is filled with exultant joy, for like the Father, he looks upon his work and finds it good. Thus is a symphony born, thus is a great poem written. Thus are more humble tasks accomplished in glory. The tending of a home, the tilling of a field, the feeding and loving care of a little child. This is controlled precipitation. It is controlled entirely by the attention of the individual. And in the normal course of events, from day to day, we become that upon which we focus our attention. The majority of people focus their attention upon becoming older, and they look about them at others who have likewise focused their attention upon old age. They find that these individuals have become aged in appearance. They say to themselves, "Yes, that is normal, one does grow older, that's for sure." They are falling right into that ancient human booby trap of judging by appearances. They, therefore, precipitate old age. It is wholly unnecessary, because thoughts are things and the pure electrons, if qualified with thoughts of youth and beauty when they enter the bloodstream, will produce youth and beauty as surely as an apple tree produces apples, not grapes. Adepts and masters who work behind the scenes are only among understanding disciples, never seem to be more than about 30 years old in appearance, although they may be hundreds or even thousands of years old. But if they are working among ordinary people who observe them each day, they voluntarily take on the appearance of age so as not to attract undue attention and even jealousy. Tesla did not need to grow old in face and form with his ability to apply inner knowledge. But he attracted so much attention by his outstanding genius and was the focus of so much jealousy, that had he remained youthful besides, it would simply have been too much for the hostile public to swallow. Tesla was highly prophetic, but he seldom demonstrated his gift, for he was seldom in the presence of an understanding human being. Thus his prophecy that prohibition would shorten his life by 20 years was misinterpreted. Tesla, after World War I, could already foresee the political situations that were in the making. He knew that out of the particular piece of stupidity known as prohibition would develop certain activities of the dark forces that would necessitate his leaving his physical body sooner than originally planned. Thus his prophecy that prohibition would shorten his life by 20 years was misinterpreted. Tesla, after World War I, could already foresee the political situations that were in the making. He knew that out of the particular piece of stupidity known as prohibition would develop certain activities of the dark forces that would necessitate his leaving his physical body sooner than originally planned. A little dictatorship leads to more dictatorship. A little government leads to a lot of government. Goodness cannot be legislated into the hearts of men. The withdrawal of the freedom of man to make a choice, even in his brand of whiskey, is bound to have a weakening influence and a bad karmic effect on both parties. In this case, the government and the governed. No master ever achieved mastery over matter by having the matter removed from his reach. Especially if the removal was carried out by politicians seeking to satisfy their lust for power over people. Many years ago, a gentleman by the name of C.A. Rackington, New York, from Australia. Mr. Rowsand is associated with aircraft development. Upon arrival, he sought out Tesla for an interview on certain patents designed to improve the speed of aircraft. When Mr. arrived at Tesla's office, he sat in the reception room waiting for Tesla to finish talking with another visitor. The door into Tesla's office stood open and his conversation could be heard clearly in both rooms. Tesla was speaking to his visitor about the plane he had designed in 1917 and given to the United States government to assist in World War I. The government officials at that time were merely amused when they looked at the design and promptly buried it in their files. The design showed a circular craft which looks very much like the flying saucers observed in the skies today. The craft carried no power plant but was to be operated from a central power station on the ground which would broadcast a beam of energy that could be picked up at any distance around the Earth by suitable receiving devices. Tesla told his visitor that an airplane of this type in the skies over Australia, for example, would be able to fly with power drawn from a generating projecting plant in America. Page 153. At this point the visitor left and Mr. Ra then entered into a long discussion with Tesla on various subjects, including his aeronautical devices. Tesla was animated by Ra's theories which he heartily approved. Suddenly Tesla became silent and appeared to be looking into space directly over Ra's head, with a fixed gaze. Then his eyes filled with tears which streamed freely down his face, and he said, "They'll steal it. They'll steal it." Well, the end of this story is that they stole it, just as Tesla predicted, and Ra, to this day, wonders at Tesla's great gift of prophecy. The two men never met again and Ra often speculated on what had happened to the aircraft design which Tesla had described to the other visitor. When Mr. Ra chatted with the author recently, we were able to bring him up to date on the plane which was known in 1917 as the Tesla Sphere. After the government of Yugoslavia established the Tesla Research Institute in Belgrade during the 30s, the design for the Tesla Sphere was turned over to the Institute Library, together with all other information which Tesla had released. After Tito rose to power, the papers in the Institute were available to Soviet scientists. By 1957, the Russians had discovered the secret of the Tesla Sphere, and had placed the plane in production. It is still probably the most advanced aircraft in the skies today, although the United States had the design in its possession for 40 years and had not bothered to develop it. The Russians had given Tesla full credit for the design. The Tesla Sphere, as has been said, is earthbound, but is highly maneuverable and can fly at tremendous speeds, drawing power beams to it from a single power plant located on the ground. However, Otis D. Carr now has his new circular foil aircraft design ready for production, and, undoubtedly, it will supplant all present planes including the Tesla Sphere. Carr's craft is not earthbound because it draws fuel directly from the atmosphere in the form of electrical charges. The Tesla Sphere, if seen during daylight hours, can easily be mistaken for a flying saucer. But the Carr craft glows at night and actually is a flying saucer, although designed on this planet. Although Tesla had announced his own prophecy about his lifespan being reduced from 150 to 130 years, the very political situation which he had envisioned at the time of Prohibition, turned out to be even worse than he had anticipated. Tesla was fully conscious that he alone was responsible for the power age which had made World War I possible. No Earthman would have been able to invent alternating current. Tesla was brought to the Earth to rescue the electrical age from the limitations of direct current and to set power geographically free, in order to prepare the people of the planet for the space age. Without alternating current, a vast, global war, even on the relatively small scale of World War I, would not have been possible. Tesla accepted full responsibility for his inventions, however, and knowing that World War II was just over the horizon, he perfected and offered to the world in 1935 an anti-war machine. This mechanism, electrical in operation, is capable of setting up an invisible and impenetrable curtain of polarized light which can be directed along national borders, thus making a nation safe within its own boundaries. Tesla offered this protection to the governments of the United States and Great Britain. The offer was flatly rejected. Tesla's vision of the future had been perfectly clear. Page 155. He knew that the dark forces were driving into the very heart of American civilization, and that a world bloodbath had been scheduled. He knew that it had been planned as a preliminary effort to set up a world dictatorship under a leader of the dark forces. The dark forces were well aware that Ascended Master Saint Germain was breathing down their necks, so close was his pursuit. They also knew that the American nation was of vital importance in the Aquarian Age, and that many of Saint Germain's most steward disciples were Americans. Under a world dictatorship, these disciples could be so hampered in their efforts that little could be accomplished for the forces of light. Further, under a world dictatorship, America could be so merged with all other nations that it might even cease to exist as a separate entity. Tesla knew all this, and he knew that his alternating current had made it possible by making the power age possible. But he knew, too, that the forces of light would do whatever could be done for the American people short of interfering with their own free will. That they could not do. They could not exert any pressure to get newspapers, magazines or radio to place the issue of Tesla's anti-war machine before the people. The government, having already rejected it, would naturally not make it a public issue. The anti-war machine was described in many newspaper and magazine articles back in 1935 and the years that followed, but at no time were the people told that the Tesla invention was absolutely necessary to protect this nation against a world war which was even then in the making. Those in high places in many nations were fully aware of this fact, but it was carefully concealed from the public. So the days passed with complacency on all sides. People everywhere were talking about the Depression. Little did they know that the Depression had been carefully staged so as to give them something to talk about, something to distract their attention from the fact that they were about to be sold down the river. Finally, after years on the dole and years on various boondoggling jobs, the American people were in a mood for war. They were in a mood for anything that would open up factories and get Tesla's alternating current humming, although they were not even aware that he existed or that his invention had supplied the power they were so eager to use. But they wanted jobs, 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 anything to make some real money for a change. Meanwhile, the forces of darkness were driving deeper and ever deeper into the heart of the nation. The people were completely in their grip. Disciples who had been in incarnation back in 1776 and remembered Valley Forge could hardly believe their eyes and ears. The seventh ray was growing stronger and the sixth ray power was waning, but the Aquarian Age was not yet in full control. Ascended Master Saint Germain, Chuan of the seventh ray, took up his work, however, and his disciples in the United States struggled valiantly to carry out his instructions. While the governments were busy turning down Tesla's offer of an anti-war machine, a polarized light mechanism that would protect the nation's boundaries, Saint Germain's disciples themselves proceeded to mentally qualify energy and with it build a wall of light around North America. They later extended it around Central and South America. It stands today, more firm than ever before, about 3 miles out from the mainland. While it is invisible to the majority of people, it is sometimes seen by travelers at sea who are mystified by it, and who attribute it to all sorts of things such as atmospheric disturbances. There is nothing unusual about it, however, because similar walls, built by adepts have been used down through countless ages to protect certain sacred spots on the earth, such as the Wisak Valley in the Himalayas. The Wall of Light built by disciples of Saint Germain through the power of directing electronic substance by human thought, can be constructed to meet many human protective needs, personal or national, but it cannot be built for any selfish reason. Therefore, it can be said the Wall of Light can be built only by adepts, or by disciples in training and affiliated with hierarchical interest. It is always a product of the forces of light acting directly or through disciples. This is a protection, because it would be extremely inconvenient and impractical if persons with less than honest intent could build a wall of light which might be detrimental to the constructive interest of others. On the other hand, the tube of light, described in the later chapter, can and should be built by everyone for self-protection. The Tesla anti-war machine is a stepped-down utilitarian version of the wall of light as constructed by adepts and disciples. The light which is utilized in the Tesla invention is related to certain ray frequencies, but since the curtain of light is produced by an electrical mechanism, it can be used without the understanding or even the support of the people within the nation which is being protected. The wall of light built by adepts and disciples without the use of any mechanical devices, but only by controlled and directed thought power, must be maintained. It must be strengthened almost hourly by feeding into it visualized energies. It demands focused attention from groups of disciples, for it must be kept firmly anchored to earth and must be kept free from rents or weak spots. The wall is actually anchored ray energy, and since it is in the nature of all flame to rise, the wall would simply disappear and return to the source if the attention of the disciples was removed for any length of time. Saint Germain requested the American disciples to construct this wall of light in order to protect this nation from direct attack by the forces of darkness operating in other nations, and also to lessen the activities of the dark forces within the United States. The wall of light served the desired purpose during the years of the so-called phony war in Europe, which finally exploded in World War II. But the black magicians opposing Saint Germain finally took their activities away from the mainland of the United States and concentrated on Hawaii, where they succeeded in conniving with black magicians in Japan to arrange the attack on Pearl Harbor. Neither the dark forces within the United States nor those working outside the country were able to break the wall of light and stage a direct attack. Therefore, the sneak attack on Pearl Harbor was devised in order to draw this nation into World War II. Had the Tesla anti-war machine been used as Tesla planned, the entire question of attack would have been brought out in the open, on the physical plane. The American people could have been assured of their safety and could have remained within the protected borders of the country until the European storm blew over. Moreover, England had been offered the Tesla anti-war machine and could have utilized it in the same protective manner. There was no reason whatsoever for either Britain or America to have been drawn into this challenging activity of the forces of darkness. Page 159. There was no reason except stupidity, that is, the American people, had they heard of the so-called mystical activities of Master Saint Germain's disciples and of the Wall of Light, would have laughed out loud. The very people who would have laughed then, are the ones who are laughing today at the idea of spaceships. They are the people who would like to laugh at Tesla if they dared. Not daring to come out openly against Tesla, they have managed to keep his name out of school books, and his theories out of university science courses. The actual reason that Tesla's scientific methods are not taught is because colleges cannot find professors who understand Tesla. Why do they not train them? Because the adoption of Tesla's inventions will disturb the status quo, they will offer a whole new way of life, they will upset church unity, and, in fact, abolish it. They will make the establishment of Christianity possible and desirable, they will cast political conniving into oblivion, they will make the present economic system look exactly like the silly thing it is. Darkness never wins out over light in the long run, and if there is a seeming victory, it is but temporary. So the forces of darkness, conniving with their colleagues within the United States, smashed at Pearl Harbor on December 7, 1941. The attack was carefully planned but not by the Japanese people. They stood only to lose, not to gain. How much they have lost the world now knows, and perhaps someday the Japanese people will have the courage to probe the depths of their side of the story. The story of how they flew into Hawaii with a gun at their backs, and with everything all set and prepared in advance for swift destruction. Out through St. Germain's Great Wall of Light, American battleships then sailed forth to their destiny. American aircraft flew through the wall and out upon their unknown missions. The great Tesla, the incomparable genius whose inventions might have prevented this world tragedy, sat in his hotel suite preparing to wind up details of his physical plane work and take up his new activities in Shambhala. The Dove had returned to him for a final farewell. She told him she was going to shed her physical body, but that when the appointed hour came she would return for him, and together they would go to Sanat Kumara's headquarters at the White Island of Shambhala, now located in the etheric realms over the Gobi Desert. Even in those last days, in the little time left to him on Earth, Tesla did not forget the hundreds of companions of his twin ray, the White Dove. Over a long period of years, Tesla had fed thousands and thousands of pigeons in New York, Hourwood doves and rock doves. In constant care and tenderness, he had ministered to birds that were sick or injured. During the years that Otis Carr was in training, he assisted Tesla daily with the feeding of the pigeons in Bryant Park, around the cathedral, and in other areas. Carr often went out into the parks and gathered up ailing or injured birds, bringing them back to Tesla's hotel suite. Tesla fabricated splints for their broken wings or broken legs, ministered to their various ailments, and kept them in his room until they were ready to fly again. It was around the year of 1940 when Tesla, in the presence of a witness, told John J. O'Neill the beautiful and magnificent love story of his life. His love for the White Dove. Tesla described her last farewell. She flew into his room in the dark of the night when he was deep in meditation. They had a long conversation, and it was then that she told him she was going to die, and that she would not come to him again. Then she flew to the windowsill and stood there gazing at Tesla sitting alone in the darkened room. Suddenly, said Tesla, from her eyes came great sweeping rays of light. Powerful, dazzling, blinding light. Light more intense than had ever been produced in my laboratories. His listeners remained utterly silent as he paused to remember. I loved that dove, he said softly. She was a white female with a touch of grey in her wings. I loved her as a man loves a woman. In speaking of O'Neill about the farewell, Tesla omitted all references to the actual identity of the dove, and to their plans to go to Shambhala, for O'Neill would not have understood. He did tell O'Neill that after the dove's last visit he knew that he would not remain long on Earth. O'Neill's esoteric knowledge was so limited that he completely missed the significance of the dove's farewell. He was utterly confused, as he stated later when he related the incident to friends, about the phrase which Tesla used in describing the depths of his love, I loved her as a man loves a woman. But in the light of later revelations as to the identity of the White Dove, it is clear that Tesla was using the only words he could use to describe his twin ray. So it was O'Neill's great privilege to hear the story of the dove from Tesla's lips. Yet later O'Neill stated that he would have regarded it as a dream experience had a witness not been present. He included the story of the dove's farewell in his book Prodigal Genius, but unfortunately, he tried to interpret it and completely missed the point which Tesla had attempted to get across to him. Tesla, assuredly had some special reason for telling the story to O'Neill, although he must have known it would not be understood. Perhaps Tesla knew that O'Neill was also living out his final years in a physical body, and perhaps the story of the dove was told in order to provide some future link on the subtle planes. O'Neill was a great admirer of the genius of Tesla, and he sensed the fact that Tesla had profound esoteric depths to his nature. But O'Neill was caught between two opposing forces. His longing to plunge deeply into esoteric studies, and his need to serve the forces of materialistic science in his capacity as science editor of the New York Herald Tribune. His job prevented him from freely and openly exploring esoteric subjects. He carefully avoided being seen in public places with certain well-known occultists. He regularly had occult books brought to him by friends so that he would not be observed entering or leaving occult libraries. He lived in constant fear of making a slip of his newspaper writing, of putting something esoteric into print that would make him the laughingstock of the materialistic scientists to whom he had to cater in order to earn a living. Moreover, O'Neill was glamoured by esotericism. It was all so new and so wonderful to him. Down through the years, Tesla often had discussions with him about various subjects that touched on the mystical and the occult. Or so O'Neill thought. Actually, they were scientific discussions, but O'Neill did not grasp that point. He wanted to keep the two entirely separate, and yet sip the honey from both. Tesla repeatedly pulled O'Neill down abruptly from his mystical clouds of glamour, pinning him firmly to earth. One of their most heated arguments was touched off by O'Neill's sentimental concern for imperfections of the human body. Tesla, who had no time for imperfection in anything, stated without qualification that the human body was a meat machine. O'Neill was horrified to hear such a bold statement come from the Superman. But Tesla was perfectly correct, for the human body is, in itself, without value. It can become a servant of God only when it is powered by God's substance that will beat the physical heart, pouring free and pure electrons into the bloodstream. In Prodigal Genius, O'Neill relates some extremely revealing points which were covered in his discussions with Tesla on the meat machine topic. As a rule, persons who are glamoured emotionally, but who are at the same time intellectuals, have the good taste and the judgment to refrain from obvious negativity in their statements. O'Neill did not dwell unduly on the negative aspect of the meat machine theory. He insisted, rather, that Tesla, in his consistent and unremitting demonstration of genius, was a living contradiction to the very meat machine idea which he advanced. O'Neill held that under the meat machine theory we would all have to be geniuses like Tesla, or all mediocrities, since we would all be living inside similar meat machines, all responding in the same way to uniform external forces. This was not the situation, so O'Neill flatly regarded the meat machine theory as disproved, and went on to his next point. He rather chided Tesla for failing to be frank with him, claiming that Tesla was afraid to discuss certain strange and supernormal experiences for fear of being misunderstood and ridiculed. Then he went further and challenged Tesla to someday open up and talk about these cloistered experiences to one who would not fail to understand him. Namely, John J. O'Neill. As one reads O'Neill's recounting of this conversation between a great genius and a neophyte, memories crowd close. Memories of another similar moment when Jesus turned to his disciples and closed a discussion with the gentle words, "There are other things which I cannot tell you, because the light would be more than you could bear." Tesla knew that a great unquenchable thirst for truth was physically consuming O'Neill, because his atomic structure, clogged with astral debris, could not stand the light. The meat machine in which O'Neill was living stubbornly refused the concentrated diet of illumination that Tesla was able and willing to offer. Tesla could not get his lighted words through the coarse vibrations of the meat machine, and thereby release the inner splendor of the threefold flame imprisoned within O'Neill's heart. Had he been able to do so, the flame from within would have provided O'Neill with its eternal sustenance. The greatest gift of compassion that Tesla could offer to his beleaguered pupil was withdrawal of the tremendous stimulation induced by these verbal discussions. O'Neill says that he did not see Tesla for a long time after the meat machine episode, but when they did talk together again, Tesla made a statement which, had it not been so subtle, so carefully couched in vibrant words of compassionate, loving understanding, pulsing with the very essence of truth, might have filled O'Neill with overwhelming discouragement. But the gentle Tesla knew the innermost heart of his earnest, striving keeler, a thirst for truth in a barren wasteland of materialistic science. Confidingly, Tesla said, "Mr. O'Neill, you understand me better than anyone else in the world." Page 165. O'Neill grasped this crumb of comfort and cherished it in sheer ecstasy. He never even suspected that he had been tested and had failed. He did not catch even a hint of the correct meaning of Tesla's pronouncement. He lived out the last glamoured years of his life without ever knowing that Tesla had finalised an evaluation of a pupil who, after long personal exposure to some of the highest teachings ever offered in the outer world, had in the end turned from the powerful brilliance of an illumination he could not bear,